Audi.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello, I'm Lisa Francesca Nand and welcome to the Big Travel Podcast brought to you by WeCure, the leading health tourism provider in the UK. WeCure connects patients seeking dental treatments, aesthetic procedures, and social and mental well-being with internationally accredited medical institutions in Turkey, turning your treatment into a relaxing holiday. And we have an exclusive offer for you. Just head to wecure.co.uk/bigtravelpodcast to find out more. That's wecure.co.uk/bigtravelpodcast. And now on to today's episode. As the presenter of the UK's favourite property programme, A Place in the Sun, Laura has travelled extensively for both work and fun. Laura and I are having a coffee in the new normal in Spain, masks at the ready, and have a lively and interesting conversation about property abroad, bargain cave houses, Greek idols, making tea for Dermot O'Leary, getting stuck in Sri Lanka, nerve-wracking Egyptian taxi rides, galloping around the pyramids in Cairo, skiing after C-sections, becoming a postmistress, running the local coffee shop, and the surprise revelation about who her father is. Clue, it's in the title. Laura Hamilton is on the Big Travel Podcast. We are here in a cafe. It feels good. Do you feel liberated a little bit?
I do. I mean, obviously, it is very, very quiet around here, down where I am, in San Pedro Alcantara. But normally, you would battle to get a parking space if you drove out in the car somewhere. And, you know, it is very empty. And it feels amazing to be here and to be out. And I feel very safe. Everyone's walking around with their masks on. But at the same time, it feels a little bit sad, just like seeing all these shops closed, and it brings me back to, you know, it takes me back to my memories of being part of A Place in the Sun when I joined the show 7-8 years ago, just coming out of that global, you know, economic downturn, and, you know, everything was a bit sad back then. Shops were shut, there were loads of repossessed properties. But over the last eight years, it's been bouncing back, and, you know, property markets picked up and shops have opened and it's been bustling and booming. And around here, Fuengirola, you know, an area that's really, I think, kind of thrived over the last 8 years. And now I'm looking around and seeing, like, so many shops closing again and thinking, oh no, like, this can't happen.
We're sitting here just off Fuengirola Church Square and we're in a churros bar. Actually, we can always have churros. And
does that work on the what's the diet? Yeah.
No, on the 16-8. No, I'm just trying to have breakfast, but not to have breakfast, but there's been plenty of wine had late in the evenings here as I'm celebrating our newfound freedom. But we're sitting opposite a cafe, a bar, a lovely tapas bar that is now for rent. And I was there just a few months ago and I chatted to the guys. They were really excited about opening this new place, and we actually met them in a bar later and we were talking to them and had a really good conversation. And, you know, now it's closed down, and I think there's going to be so many businesses like that. But you're right in terms of this place having turned around. When I was, you know, came here when I was 7 years old, and when in the 80s and 90s, like maybe the 90s when I went back to the UK, I was a bit embarrassed about being from Fuengirola because it was a bit cheesy and a bit run down and everything. And I've been really proud in the last, say, 10 or 15 years because it has turned around. And all these streets here, they never used to be paved over. They used to be full of cars and traffic, and now they're full of tapas bars and people enjoying themselves. And, you know, I just hope that it doesn't sort of, you know, turn the other way again now that fewer people are coming.
I mean the thing about Fuengirola is compared to down further where I am, this is a Spanish working town as well. So I think actually it's those towns that have probably got more chance of surviving than places that are a little bit more touristy. So, you know, I'd hope for somewhere like Fuengirola, actually, you know, things, okay, they are going to be here, businesses are going to be here, as we've seen, but you'd like to think the Spanish working towns where people do really live are probably the ones that will work, survive.
Yeah, hopefully. And it feels very Spanish here at the moment. I know that sounds stupid because we are in Spain, but because there's no pasty people, you know.
Well, apart from me, because I only arrived 2 days ago. You've got a wonderful colour.
I've got an advantage of the tan from my Indian Fijian dad. But even looking at the beach, everyone's brown skinned. I know that sounds so obvious and maybe like even a bit offensive in a way to people without the tan. But you know, the colour of the beach is different. Does that make sense?
I hear you. There are more, you know, locals that are around and about. I mean, well, look. Are British people going to come here now for the next few weeks? I don't know. I mean, I was one of those people that was on the flight as the 2-week quarantine was announced. I was 36,000 feet in the air, and the news came through on my phone because I did decide to sign up to the onboard Wi-Fi, and I just was kind of telling my family around me, look, but this is going on. And we were at the attitude of like, well, do you know what? What can you do about now? Nothing. We're going to have to quarantine for 2 weeks. And I was here to film a TV show, Place in the Sun, and we were due to start filming on Monday. The quarantine wouldn't have been an issue. It was the fact that the government enforced the advice against any non-essential travel to Spain, which then obviously means that you're not insured if you fly out from the UK. I think for myself, I'm okay because I'm here now, so my insurance is there. But effectively, you know, I was here until the 4th of September. I paid for my kids to go to a summer camp school. I'd actually rented another apartment for other family members that were coming out later on in August. Well, that's now not needed, and I've lost money there. And you know, the bummer of it all is I'm not working now. I'm not earning. I didn't, unlike you, where you were like, right, I'm going to come out here for the summer. And do you know what? Great. Anybody that, because I have had a few comments from people saying, well, you know, irresponsible, why did you travel? You should have known. Well, no, I didn't know when I travelled. And actually, I also do think that this lockdown for so many people in the UK or wherever you are has been mentally tough, you know, and people need to feel that they've got a bit of a holiday. So should you be punished because, or should people think bad of you because you got out here before or you decided to take a holiday? No, you know, this situation is individual to everybody. You don't know people's circumstances. You can get this virus anywhere, wherever you are in the world, and as long as you keep yourself safe, then what more can you do? And you're feeling you're keeping yourself safe mentally because you know you need to feel good, you need to feel the sunshine. Your kids don't want to be cooped up, they want to get out, they want to swim, they want to do. So, and I also feel that I'm a massive advocate of travel, obviously, it's what I do for my job, it's what you do for yours. The world does need to keep moving. And because if it doesn't, look what's going to happen. Things are going to shut, business is going to close, the economy is going to just... So...
Yeah, like those in the tapas bar behind you, those nice guys that I met that night, really excited about, you know, doing their gourmet tapas. You know, what are they doing now? I don't know what their future is going to be. And I think you're absolutely right. That's my attitude. As long as you're keeping yourself safe, which by keeping yourself safe is keeping other people safe, and just stick to the local laws, it's okay. But now, this is going to go out 2 weeks from today because I've already got Ian Dale scheduled in. I've got Ian Dale, Lloyd Grossman, Lem Cisse, and Justin Sumpa all scheduled, all recorded in the bag. So, but I'm going to put you out first because this is current and we are here in Spain and it's quite exciting, worrying, concerning time for travel. You and I met on Channel 5 News yesterday over the TV, and where we were both talking about the quarantine and the Foreign Office advice changing. It's quite interesting though, isn't it? I mean, you have no choice because you were on the plane, but it takes a brave person. I mean, I'm kind of from here in Spain. It's a home. You know, I grew up here. So I possibly would come. I'd have people still come. I'd have people in my life telling me not to, because it's quite a big deal to go to a country when the Foreign Office, you know, authority says don't go there.
But currently, I know I've said about the insurance, currently if you have got the E111 card, I think you have got access to healthcare. I know that, like, I can't say, you know, come, I don't want to, but my husband's an insurance broker, so, you know, we've got insurance.
You're insured up to the hilt.
Exactly. But, I mean, there are people on our urbanisation where our place is that they decided to fly on Sunday, and I've had the conversation with them. You know, they said, do you think we were responsible for coming out here and doing this? And I'm like, well, no, you did what you felt was right for you and your family. I mean, I have been, I'm going to be honest, I have been slightly nervous about things that I've posted on my social media, because I have thought, oh no, are people going to judge me? You know, I posted a photo of my family and I leaving Heathrow Airport with myself and my husband with masks on, and my children, who are 5 and 6, didn't have masks on because they're not legally required to. That doesn't make me an irresponsible person because my children weren't wearing masks. My children have both said to me, Mummy, we cannot breathe with this on. And, you know, if the government guideline is that you don't, they don't need to wear a mask to fly, that's why.
And, you know, I wouldn't worry about that. They don't.
I had people commenting, and I must admit, you know, I've had other people, as I said, saying to me, "Oh, irresponsible! You shouldn't have gone. Why did you go?" I sort of think, well, you know, do I have to justify it? That I say that I was actually coming out here to work. Social media is great, but it's bad, isn't it? You know, you shouldn't judge people. I'm only doing what I feel is best for me and my family. I was in a situation. Would I not have travelled had I not have known that? If I'd have known this was going to happen, would I have got that on that plane? Probably not. But not because I didn't want a holiday, because I need to work. And I came out here for work. So I probably wouldn't have come out for that reason. Because let's face it, you know, around Portobonese, it's quite expensive to go out around there. And bearing in mind I haven't worked really since March, I can't really afford to come out here and live the lifestyle on holiday right now. So I probably wouldn't have come. But if you are desperate to have a holiday and, you know, you've got... What about people that have got homes here?
That's 400,000 British people that have homes here.
Have homes here and haven't been able to come to them, and they might be in disrepair. You know, everybody's situation is individual to them, and you have to make your decision to do what you do for what's right for you. And you can't think about anybody else. And I know that might sound irresponsible, but, you know...
No, I don't think it's irresponsible. And I think that you have to naturally, because you're in the public eye, and, you know, people do get very judgmental these days, and very verbal as well. People really don't care about insulting each other online. People do comment, and I would never do that, but people seem the cloak of anonymity. Yeah. I can't even say it. But you can hide behind, you know, a faceless profile on the internet, can't you? But we better get onto your travels, and you're absolutely right about health insurance. If you're here, you have the EHIC, which is the...
EHIC.
It's not the E111
right.
Anymore. It's the European Health Insurance Card.
Okay.
So luckily, until
now
January, leaving the EU is a whole other ballgame, but until January we are still covered health-wise, so there is that.
We'll get out here before then.
Yeah, exactly. But you mentioned, I don't know whether to start with travel or property, but you mentioned about people having homes here, and I have a home here, and I always seem to feel I have to justify that because it makes me seem like the media elite that people sort of already seem to think I am, but I'm not. I grew up here. And also, I know houses here selling for like 40 grand at the moment. They really are. But this is all part of your job, so...
Yeah, and you know, what I will say, if we're talking about Place in the Sun, Place in the Sun has absolutely soared, like boomed in lockdown, because it's been the escapism, you know, people want to watch it and feel good, and the show has done incredibly well, and it's the new series is on right now, 40 brand new episodes, which is why Channel 4 and the production company have obviously implemented you know, procedures to make sure everyone's safe, and the format of the show's changed. Well, I'd like to, I know it's changed because they told me it's changed. I haven't experienced the change yet, but hopefully I will. But that's why we wanted to kind of get filming again. And interestingly, they did a survey with Kavanaugh, and the number one thing that people said they would do following a win or any money that they came into was to buy a holiday home. I think initially it was abroad. I hope that's still the case. But I think I'm hopeful that people will want to buy property abroad, and they'll want it to be theirs, knowing that no one else is going. That's not to say that hotels aren't going to obviously be, you know, making sure people are safe, but I think there may well be a rise in people wanting to buy their own homes abroad. And as you say, there are still amazing properties, amazing prices to be had. So let's keep positive.
And the people on A Place in the Sun, I get the impression, I don't know if there's any surveys or anything done about this, I get the impression the people on A Place in the Sun are ordinary working class people that have done well or worked hard or saved, you know, they've come to a point where they in their life where they want to, they've done all right, they're aspirational, yeah, exactly, the people that watch and the people that buy the property, nobody's some, you know, sort of rich person with lots of money, they're all thinking, you know, I've done okay, maybe done it okay, you know, worked my way up in business or property or work back in the UK, and then they can buy here. So it's more aspirational rather than sort of already established people.
Exactly. You know, it really does, and you've hit the nail on the head, because if you look at the way the show is formatted, people do often say, oh, why can't you have people on with bigger budgets or whatever? Well, budgets can range for anything from between, I mean, I had a budget, it was like £29,000, and I was filming cave houses around Guadix, and that was incredible. You know, did like a show there with these two young guys, but we've had budgets from like that price up to, we have done slightly higher budgets, but I'd say the majority of the shows are between sort of £50,000 and £250,000, because we want the audience to think, do you know what, this is achievable. And for the bit of take home, for the bit of luxury, the you know, the inspiring property is the luxury property that we have on the show, that everyone loves to have a nosy around, a £1 million property, and you know, I do, it's great. And so at least the audience gets to see that, but it just makes them think, well, I don't need to afford to be able to afford that, actually I can still enjoy the life in that place, in that country, by having a property that's still as lovely but doesn't cost as much. So
I love the fact that a £29,000 cave house to £1 million property, and this is, well, I will have to have a go at you now, because you have stolen my dream job, and I think I'm beyond the point of being offered the job. Obviously you have the job, you have been stolen my dream job, and which kind of brings me on to, you know, how you got started, because you're come from a normal working family in Dartford, am I right? Well, actually no, you just told me it was Falconwood in southeast London, which is all in a similar sort of area. How did you come to steal my perfect job?
I started in television, working in TV, when I was 18 years old. So I always had this thing about wanting to work in the media. Didn't know, my dad was a drummer. My dad was Uncle Bulgaria in the Wombles, actually.
No, seriously?
Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So
I didn't find that on Wikipedia.
My dad had this musical background, so I kind of grew up with a bit of a show.
My mind is still totally blown by that.
You weren't expecting
really.
That when we met for coffee in Plaza Constitution in Fuengirola, were you?
That was amazing.
So my dad had this kind of like showbiz background, I suppose. My mum worked in a school, and so as I grew up, I kind of always thought, oh, like one day I'd love to kind of get into the church bell. One day I'd love to try and get into the media, and I thought I wanted to get into presenting, and basically I did my A-levels, and when I was 18 I incredibly got a job at Channel 4 as a runner. So I was making teas and coffees for Dermot O'Leary, who is an amazing guy. Loads of shows that I worked on, and I worked behind the scenes for 4 years. But when I was 19, I decided to buy my first property. So I, again, had this thing. I've always said I had old head on young shoulders, like as a 16-year-old. So I'd saved £5,000 and I bought my first property at 19. And then 3 months, and I was still working behind the scenes in TV, 3 months after I bought that property, I got made redundant. I was working at a shopping channel, and I got made redundant and thought, what am I going to do now? So I've always been somebody that I'm like, right, let's think quickly. Let's turn a negative into a positive. It's happened for a reason, so let's turn it around. And so I ended up moving back home with my mum and dad. I mean, I was 19, and I let it out. And so the money that I was getting from the rent was covering the mortgage and a little bit more. I mean, obviously, this was, I'm 38 now, so 19. It's quite a while ago. But I moved back home, and then that enabled me to save again, start saving. And that was how I ended up kind of falling into property. So I carried on working behind the scenes in TV. When I was 21, I got a break on kids' telly. So I was kids' TV presenter. I've always been very happy, smiley, and one of those annoying people that you see in the morning. I'm definitely a morning person. That, you know, I got this kids' TV presenting job, and I ended up being kids' TV presenter, I think, for 3 or 4 years. Then I took part in Dancing on Ice in 2011, which was a real kind of game changer for me, because a year before that, I'd met the team for A Place in the Sun, and they weren't filming the show at that time because of the recession and a lack of people wanting to buy properties abroad. And so I'd met them, I took part in Dancing on Ice, and I made it quite clear to like people that I was working with that I was ready to try and make that move away from kids' telly. As much as I loved it, I was ready to move on. And I just was, look, it's so much of it is luck, right place, right time, but I managed to somehow merge my, well, it made sense, my property experience, because by that time I'd bought and renovated 8 houses. I'd managed to merge that with my TV presenting, and not that I knew loads about property abroad, but we had a family home abroad, and then merged the two together and joined A Place in the Sun. And then along the way, whilst I've been doing A Place in the Sun, I've obviously done quite a few other little bits and pieces in between, from The Jump, got married, had 2 kids, present Fort Boyard on ITV, and then 3-4 years ago, bought a coffee shop, restaurant and deli, became a postmistress, and did that for the community, and yeah, so I have this other business on the side, but I think...
Is that still going?
Yeah.
Where is it?
It's in Purley, which is where I live.
Purley's so, like Croydon sort of area?
Yeah. So that's where my husband was from, and when I met him, he said he'd never live anywhere else. So I ended up moving from Kent to Surrey. But
to be fair, it's only about half an hour drive, isn't exactly. it, as far as I can see. It's
exactly.
I know you. That's
not
really travelling.
But yeah, so again, that was an attitude that I took when lockdown happened, and it was like, right, coffee shops and restaurants have all got to close. Within 24 hours, I was like, right, let's flip it. Let's turn it into the village shop. Let's start delivering out to the community. Let's help the elderly, those in need that can't get to have an online shop, can't get to the supermarket. We're going to help them. And I was more interested, and I obviously, you know, we need the business to keep going and need to make money. But at that time, I was like, look, if we don't make money, as long as we can just break even and tick over, all I care about is helping those in the community, keeping our staff employed from a mental health, you know, point of view as well, and keeping occupied. Look, I'm a busy person, and as you can probably tell, I live my life at a million miles an hour. I'm here now, not working, but working.
Luckily, I'm not paying you, so, yeah. But I will buy the coffee, which is about €1. I'll go that.
No,
far.
But you know what I mean. Like, I could be sat here, kind of going, actually, I'm going to turn this into a holiday, and I'm not going to get you wrong. I'm going to go home, go back after this, and I will switch off and lay around the pool for a few hours whilst my kids are enjoying their summer camp school. But what I will say is, anybody that would look at me on social media and go, oh, your life's one big holiday, you know, you travel, you do this, and that's where I think I want to sort of change a little bit, because I work hard, and you know, even when we film a place in the sun, it isn't a holiday. We're actually doing a job where we're helping. Okay, we're in the sunshine, and I'm forever grateful for that. You know, I love getting to see other places and love being in the heat. But we do work, and
yeah,
you all know
really
that actually traveling with your family. I think travel for kids in particular is so important. You know, my children obviously aren't fluent in Spanish, probably like, you know, yours are probably
not at all. They can
more.
Order drinks and that's it. It's really embarrassing.
But I think, you know, the fact that traveling is something that anyone that has kids, you should do. Like, it helps build their confidence, you know, meeting other cultures, like tasting other cuisines, hearing new languages. And so I mean that's also why I just think I don't want to stop travel. I want to keep going. Like, we need to keep going.
I think one of the problems is not such a main problem in it, because you're blonde and attractive and bubbly. People just assume that you're having an easy ride of it. But it sounds, I know why you've got the job now that I haven't. It's because you're clever. You're in the ball and you're turning. You know, you're always finding ways of making. You know, trying to turn things around. I'm gonna say almost a ducker and diver, maybe.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'm entrepreneurial. Like, I am. I have a business, and at one point we had 27 staff at our coffee shop. We now have 16. And that's purely because some people decided to leave in lockdown and they want it. Because I think this situation has made people rethink, you know, change career. But, you know, we do still have 16 staff and that business is running. I mean, for me, it was like, oh my word, I'm having to leave that behind and come and do this. So, like, that's something that's still there in the background.
Yeah,
that I have
you've got
to
stuck
deal
in
with.
Spain here without work, so you're paying for all this stuff without, and you're self-employed, you know. And,
yeah.
And you've left the coffee shop, which has now turned into the village store. And
it's back now as a coffee shop. So we're serving takeaways, and you know, our outside space is open. But I am. I have to keep going, like, mentally. I'm a workaholic. I'm an entrepreneur.
The fact that you've done it. Like, I walk past the businesses all the time and think, I don't know why, because I have no skills in many of these areas, but I walk past things and what would I do with that empty locale, as we call it in Spain? I always use the word locale. I don't even know if that was it. What do you call it? Like a shop, like an empty space.
An empty commercial unit
or whatever. Yeah. For some reason, I get confused with the Spanish and the English, just for a few things. But there's one down the port here, and I think, should I open a little coffee shop? I mean, I literally have burnt the kitchen down 3 times when boiling a kettle. I now don't have a kettle. I actually burnt a pan of water the other day when I was making myself a coffee. I am not the person to open a coffee shop.
No, but you say that. If you'd have asked me 4 years ago, would we own a coffee shop? I became a postmistress. The local post office was closing down, and I thought, you know what, let's integrate a post office within a coffee shop and let's make it a community place. Okay, after a year of having the post office, it didn't, unfortunately, that side of the business didn't work. And I had to say, right, you know what, commercially, that's not viable, let's close it down. So I went from being like the local, oh yeah, she's bought the post office back, amazing, 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 to then, oh, now she's closing it again. The local hero to, oh, she never wanted to have the post office in the first place. Of course I did. I tried. It didn't work, but it lost money. And, you know, in business, you can't lose, you can't survive. Okay, if you can break even, that's one thing, but you can't run a business and lose 12 grand a year. So we had to close it, and I had to make that decision. And, okay, some people didn't like it, but I think you just have to accept that, don't you? Whether you post things on social media, whether you're running a business, whether you're doing, not everyone is going to like you. And so, you know, if 80% of people like what you do, then amazing. But you're always going to get people that don't. And as long as you're doing what you feel is the best thing to do, you can't do any more than that. You know, I am lucky that I've got an amazing supportive family. That my husband thinks sometimes that I'm an absolute crook. crazy person. Like when I say to him, oh, I'm going to be a postmistress, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, he's like, all right.
And also, like, he literally is an insurance salesman. That's like one of the most straight up jobs you can do, right?
Well, when I did
at least the, risk,
I'd risky had job. Exactly. Well, when I had Rocco, my son Rocco, who is now six, I unfortunately, after being in labour for 5 hours, I found out that he was breech and I wasn't going to be having him naturally, so I was going to have an emergency cesarean. So, you know, having gone along thinking, oh yeah, it's all going to plan, it's all lovely, and then being told, right, now you've got to have an emergency cesarean. I was like, oh, great, thanks. So into the theatre, out comes Rocco. 2 weeks later, I get a phone call from Channel 4 saying, do you want to come and take part in the jump, the ski show, the jump? And I went, yeah, but I've just had a cesarean section. And they were like, but I've skied since I was a kid, right? So I knew that I'd be okay on the ski front. And they said, well, look, if we look after you and you pass a medical, and would you do it? Now, I'm like, yeah, throw it up. My problem is, do you know what my problem is? I can't say no. I always find it difficult. Whether it's, you know, a charity campaign, or even if I don't have the time for it, I'm like, I'll find time. I just want to help. I just want to do this. And so, yeah, I do find it very difficult to say no.
So you were skiing on the jump. Yeah. How many weeks post C-section?
I was skiing 3 weeks after.
Seriously?
C-section. But my hat. So Alex said to me, he was like, you'll never get insured. And I went, if I pass the medical.
That's his main concern. It's not like you might fall over, burst your scars, whatever.
You'll never get insured. And I went, okay, well, if I pass the medical. And he went, Laura, like, you're insane. Like, why? And I'm like, but again, like, I'm a workaholic. And I could take Rocco with me. And you know, I love my kids. Like, I would never, obviously, like, they're my number one priority. But I was like, look, I want to try and do it. Let's try and make it work. So, God, I'll tell you what, my husband's parents are probably like, couldn't you just marry somebody that just...
A nice, normal girl. That's what he thought he was getting. A nice girl from Southeast London, Kent, you know.
And then, yeah, instead I'm like, yeah, let's do this, let's go. But
so have you travelled from an early age?
I grew up, I grew up with my mum and dad had a timeshare in Tenerife, actually. So we used to go there, and you know, we'd been to Florida and travelled a bit in Europe. But then when I was, I think I must have been about 12, 13, my parents decided to get a caravan and go camping in caravanning. And I think a bit like you saying, oh, you know, when you grew up in Fuengirola and you're like, I'm going to Fuengirola, it just wasn't cool. Well, that was me with the caravan.
At 13, yeah, nobody wants to be going off in a caravan at 13 with their parents, do they?
Do I have to tell my friends at school that my mum and dad have got a caravan? Like, really? You know, I'm never going to live this down.
So a static caravan or one that moves around?
No, like a touring caravan.
Sounds great to me now. Well, yeah. 13, it's like not cool.
So my mum and dad were like, yep, we're going to explore the UK and then we'll see where it takes us. And I was going to like slate mines in Wales, and you know, like it was educational now. And I look back on it and think, wow, like my mum and dad took me to the Cadbury's chocolate factory in Birmingham, you know, like all great things.
Sorry, the slate mine reminds me of, you'll be able to relate to this, of Peppa Pig when they go to like the concrete park or Mr. Potato Land or something.
So we were going to like these places, and you know, I had friends that would go back to school and go, oh yeah, we were in Lanzarote over half term, and I'd be like, yeah, I was in a slate mine in Wales. But my mum and dad were like, look, you've explored the UK. Then we started exploring France and going to some really cool campsites in the south of France. And last year, so I grew up doing that, and then I think when I was 16, 17, I'd said to my mum and dad, okay, like I want to start now going away with friends, and had a boyfriend at the time whose parents had a house in Portugal, so I would
handy,
go there.
Very handy.
And that was where things then started to, you know, I got my independence, and I was like, love of travel. I went to New York with him, I went to Portugal, I got a round the world ticket when I was like early 20s and travelled with a friend. And yeah, just love seeing different places. But I always thought, oh, I'll never camp again. I'll never, you know, especially like my husband, it's not his thing. But last year when I was filming a place in the sun in France, I said, you know what? My children would love to go to some French campsites, and so I'm going to be filming. Let's make this the best possible experience for them, and we'll stay on campsites. So we didn't stay in a tent, we didn't stay in a caravan. I looked into getting one of the mobile, what are they called, like the RVs that you travel around in, but it just wasn't feasible because obviously I have to drive to location every day and we needed a base. So we decided to rent one of the little cabins on the campsite, and I wouldn't say it was roughing it, but you know, we didn't have air conditioning. I was sleeping on a mezzanine bunk bed on the floor whilst I was filming. So every day when I was leaving for location, I think everyone on the campsite probably thought, what on earth is this girl doing? Like glamming up every day and then driving and then coming back.
But, leaving her husband and kids all day.
No, Alex wasn't there. My husband wasn't
there.
Right. So I had a friend that was helping look after the children for me. Alex was back home working and he went, don't ever ask me to go camping with you because that's never going to happen.
He wouldn't go.
No, he wouldn't go. So I had a friend
don't
with
get
me.
Great camping insurance, I don't know.
Probably not, yeah. But the children had the most amazing time. You know, my son, I think it's the freedom, the independence on a campsite, you know. Rocco was off fishing with a friend in the lake. And so they loved it. They loved it.
That sounds amazing. I think this is a terribly middle-class problem, which is funny. I am someone from a not such a middle-class background. Well, you know, we've grown more middle-class as the generations and years have gone on. But one of the perils of having bought a house in Spain is that we only come here for our holidays at the moment. Although I get to travel a little bit on my own through work, I love coming here all the time because we know people, we've got friends, you know, we do the same stuff, and it's really exciting. It's just so lovely. It's a warm, warm, lovely feeling. But equally, I'm not taking the kids to France, you know, Italy, Greece.
You know, there's time for that.
Yeah.
And I sort of think, you know, you've got your home here, and let's hope in the future, at a moment's notice, you'll just be able to nip over for the weekend, and you can come here for extended periods of time, as you do. And I think it's great to have a home in the sun. And we do, I mean, look, I do get to go to other places. We do try as a family to still have a holiday somewhere else. Although that does sound, you know, a bit luxurious sometimes when you've got a holiday home. But you love it here. I love it here. You know, it's familiar and the kids love that. There's a safety thing and they've got their friends here. And I know Rocco and Talia, they will this afternoon come back from their little summer camp and there are kids around the pool that they have seen year upon year upon year. And, you know, okay, they're only 5 and 6, but they've known my children, these other children that are a little bit older, since they were like 2, 3. And I just think that's so nice. They've got their like holiday home friends.
And that's funny, isn't it? When you're a kid and you're growing up with your parents and you're cringing, going back to the same places or the campsites or, you know, the slate mine.
Yeah.
It does sound fascinating. Later on, when you have your own family, there is something, and which ties us in back nicely to, you know, the exact work you do. There is something lovely, whether you've got your own place there or you're going to the same hotel or something, there is something lovely about going back to the same place,
yeah,
isn't there?
Yeah.
Not all travel has to be like slinging on a backpack and going through Nepal.
No, it doesn't. And actually, I planned to come here until September. That was the plan. And who knows, things, you know, might change, might end up somewhere else. I don't know what's going to happen with my work right now. I don't know what the situation's going to be in the next few weeks with the quarantine in the UK and returning from Spain. You just don't know.
I see you.
Oh, Laura's been spotted. Yeah, go on, take a selfie. Go on.
Yeah, it's fine.
Do you want me to do it for you?
Yeah, I'll do it.
Hang on, here we go.
Do you think you're a bit incognito?
Do we have to put this on, though?
Oh, yeah, maybe, but a mask on.
You wouldn't see
them. Okay. Well, I don't know.
I don't want to be irresponsible.
There we go.
Are you working at the moment, no?
We're supposed to be. We were supposed to be filming on Monday, yeah.
So we'll put it on the social media.
Smile.
Not working.
Wow.
show as well.
I'm a travel expert on TV and radio, so not no. I get recognised sometimes, but probably not as much as Laura.
We were on Channel 5 News together last night, so.
Right.
Yeah, we're just in the middle of doing an interview, so we should get back on it.
Can I have a
No, you don't have to. Don't feel obliged.
Your name is?
I'm Lisa Francesca Nerns. How funny.
There you go.
So you recognise wherever you go.
Aww, take care. Take care.
Thank you. See you on the
Yeah. That's funny. His wife's over there filming it as well. Oh, does that happen a lot?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's certain parts of Spain, yeah. I think people often will look at me and go, I know you're from somewhere, but I don't know where, but... It does happen occasionally. I think when people do stop you and say, oh, can I have a photo or can we have a chat? I think that's so lovely because it's just like, that just makes me think, oh, people do watch the show, they love it. And rather than people just looking at you and going, like staring, makes you paranoid then. You're like, what's wrong? What's wrong? You know, so, no, it's nice when people stop you and have your photos up.
Seems like a fitting way to start wrapping it up. But are there any like travel stories that you think I've missed? I mean, obviously there's so many.
Oh gosh, I mean, through my experiences of travel, there are tons of stories. But you know, I look back and some of the things I think I put myself in some pretty crazy situations. I was in Egypt with a boyfriend in my early 20s, and we went to a place called Taba, and he got an ear infection, so we couldn't travel home. So we decided that we would go to see the pyramids. But in order to go to pyramids, we didn't have the correct visa. So we had to go to the border and get our passport stamped in order to get the correct visa. And so we just met a local guy who took us to the border, took our passports from us, and we got the visa. But you know when you look back and go, oh my word, like if my kids did that now, got in a car. I mean, it was a local guy that had got recommended, but he did it. He drove us. So he drove us to the border. They took our passports. We got our visas. Then he drove us the following day for 7 hours to the pyramids. We had dinner with his family in their apartment in Cairo. They couldn't speak a word of English. My boyfriend and I were sat there going, like, what on earth? Like, are we doing? But we went to the pyramids. We galloped on horses around the pyramids. It was the most incredible. He took us to like markets where, you know, British people don't go, and he just said, make sure you've got a wedding ring on your finger and you hold hands and you cover up. And insane experience, but I look back and go, was that slightly irresponsible?
That's quite funny because I've done the exact same thing from Taba to the border with a guy that we didn't know. They took our passports for an hour because we were coming on the I was coming on a yacht in the Red Sea, got off at Taba, spent a little while there, and then they had our passports, got into this car to get to not to go to the pyramids. Unfortunately, I've never been to the pyramids, but to drive back to the Israeli border, and then travel through there. However, it was really scary. You know, we were going through the sort of desert at night, and the guy had all this music blaring, and you think, what are we doing here? It felt really quite edgy. And then it was all fine, you know, a bit like with you. But yeah, go on, you were going to tell me another story.
Well, I did, I went on another trip. I got stuck in Sri Lanka during the ash cloud. So I made the best of it and flew to the Maldives. And had a nice little trip to the Maldives. But I was travelling Sri Lanka and prior to this, and again, one of the most funny experiences. They sold us this, I think we were staying in like a hostel in Sri Lanka. They sold us this package where you would go on a spa day around like the Golden Triangle, you know, Anuradhapura, Kandy, Sigiriya, all around there. So I did this trip and with a boyfriend and went to, we got taken to this little spa retreat. And one of the, I look back at it now and I laugh so much that they said, right, okay, one of the treatments of the massage is you get in this this like steamer, and it was like a coffin, right? He got in this thing, like this capsule, and I was like, I can't do that. I just can't do it. He got in there, and when he came out, he went, Nora, there were cockroaches in there. It's like something from I'm a Celebrity, get me out of here. I mean, like, honestly, I was like, we laughed about it so much. I was like, what was relaxing about that treatment at all? Like, you know, I think, you know, what it cost us, like, such a minimal amount of money, but we just, it was hilarious.
I love the fact that, like, as British people, you're kind of like, you just want to go along with it. A bit like when you went to dinner with the guy's house and you think, probably might want to go to a restaurant here, but you're too embarrassed to say, I want to get out of this cockroach ridden coffin right now. This is not much fun.
I cannot do that. You know, I've travelled Thailand. I got the Thai tattoo where I got off a scooter on the wrong side my leg on the exhaust pipe, and then went jungle trekking on rafts through Chiang Mai. And I mean, my travel stories are kind of, I could go on and on and about it, but that's why travel is so important. It means, you know, so much to me. I feel like, you know, my experiences, my adventures, it helps you grow as a person. And I think that my children growing up, the life that they've had traveling with me, whilst I've been so lucky to bring them with me whilst I'm working, I've instilled that sense of adventure in them too. And you know, my mum always says to me, oh, you know, you'll live to regret it, Laura, because they might well end up wanting to live in a country far away and not to be close to you. And I'm like, you know what, if that's what they choose to do, that's what they've got to do. The world's a big place, and ultimately they have to be at home where they feel suits them most. And you know, I want to be close to them, but if they said to me, Mom, we're going to go and live in Australia, or we're going to live, you know, in Spain, we're going to live wherever, I'm like, go do it, go have fun and explore.
Well, I you know, children have a habit of surprising us, and sometimes they rebel. They might, like, get married at 18 to an insurance guy and stay in the same place for the rest of their lives. I'm going to ask you my last question now. My last question is always about music, because I think the music and travel very much go hand in hand. So I'm going to have to ask you to choose one song. If you had to choose one song that reminds you of a special or memorable, doesn't have to be special, moment, time and place of travel,
okay,
what is that song and what was going on?
Again, a really difficult question to ask, because I'm so with you on that. I think there are songs that you hear on your travels that will, when you hear them again, they'll always take you back to that time. And there's a song when I was driving in Australia, Leo Sayer's song, and I can't think of it.
I love Leo Sayer. Thunder in my heart.
Yeah, Thunder in my heart. There you go. Thunder in my heart. That song will always take me back to, I was driving in Australia with one of my best friends, Nikki, when we were on our round the world trip, and driving between Cairns, somewhere on the way to Cairns, and it just takes me back there. I can visualise, we had a Mini, we hired this Mini, and yeah, it's amazing. I hear it now and I'm there.
It's a great song, and that sounds like the most amazing trip, and I could talk to you forever, but I've got to stop somewhere. Thank you so much for coming on the Big Travel Podcast.
Thank you.
And having planned to be in Spain all summer, Laura and her husband and kids are now in Greece to film there instead. Such is travel and work in the time of Corona. Thank you so much for listening. Next week we will have the brilliant poet Lem Sisay.